This is Digital Story Podcast number 937, March 5th, 2024. Today's theme is Film Simulations, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. I'm Derek Story. Your first thought may be, why do I care about film simulations? And that's fair if what you're after is the standard JPEG processing included with your camera. But since electronic viewfinders can present a view of the world with our settings applied, film simulations can lead the way to more creative photography. I will explain more in the first story of today's TDS Photography Podcast. All of that and more. I hope you enjoy the show. The announcement of the new Fujifilm X106 with its 20 film simulations seems to have re-energized this conversation. Being a fan of these myself, I thought it'd be worth a few minutes of our time. So basically, film simulations, they're merely alternative JPEG processing formulas. Camera manufacturers, they have their own default recipes and they're all quite good. And when you shoot with a camera, and let's say you're in JPEG mode or JPEG plus RAW, that JPEG that you see on the back of the LCD and shows up on your computer screen, a lot of work has gone into creating that image. And a lot of times camera manufacturers have their own look or a look that's unique to their view of the world. So photographers can live with that alone. No problem at all. But if we want to get creative, there are certainly alternatives. And this became really interesting when mirrorless cameras came about with their electronic viewfinders that allowed us to see the settings we have in the camera through the viewfinder. So if we switch to monochrome, then the world through the electronic viewfinder is monochrome. If we switch to a real punchy color like a Velvia film simulation, then we see that punchy color when we look through the electronic viewfinder. And this made film simulations a lot more fun because you can get inspired. If you're picking a certain film simulation, like for instance, let's say that I pick Kodak Tri-X black and white for my Nikon ZF or my Olympus Pen F, and I'm looking at the world in Tri-X and I'm shooting a shoot, let's say an urban scene that renders really well in that type of grainy, contrasty black and white, then I'm going, wow, these are really cool, and I'm excited, and I shoot more, and I just have a lot of fun. It's like it starts a vicious cycle in the right direction. It's like a small snowball that becomes a big one. Use whatever metaphor you want, but film simulations can be very exciting when you match the right one for the subject that you have. And that's why many of us like them so much. Nearly every camera has a way to apply these. Fujifilm, they build them right into the camera, all right? Right into the camera. And the cool thing about Fujifilm is that their years and years and years of color science research for their film and for their digital cameras too really provide some film simulations that are compelling, that we're familiar with. I mean, if you shoot Velvia slide film back in the analog days, or even today, you know what that looks like. You know how that responds. So if you choose that film simulation in your X106, you know what to expect. You go, hey, this is a fantastic landscape. It's very colorful. I want to get all that color. I'm going to choose the Velvia film simulation over the standard Provia, right? It's that sort of thing. Film simulations and Fujifilm cameras have become almost synonymous, but they're not the only ones that have them or have this ability. For instance, with the Nikon, the new Nikon Z series mirrorless cameras, they have them as well. And sometimes they're just called different things. For instance, on Nikons, they're called picture controls. And you have a picture control section in your menu. And I think it's in the first one. It's in the shooting menu. So you have different built-in picture controls that you can choose from. Now, they don't call them out, and Nikon doesn't call them out as a specific film simulation, you know, Kodak or Fuji or Agfa or whatever. They don't call them out that way, but essentially, they're those. They are all those different looks. And then there are independent recipes or independent picture controls that you can apply. And I talked about this in last week's Nimble Photographer newsletter. If you're interested in this, if you're a Nikon photographer and you're interested in this, then you want to go over and check out the latest newsletter, because I talk about the website, Nikon Picture Control Editor, and the whole little bit of spiel about it, provide a link and explain a little bit about that site because it's a little unique. Then there are all those picture controls, and there are tons of them. Agfa simulations, Kodak simulations, Fujifilm simulations, on and on and on, that you can apply. You can download them, and then you can load them in to your Nikon. My ZF, for example, it has all the stuff that Nikon includes, and then it has 9 open slots that I can fill with these third-party simulations that I download, and that's exactly what I have done. I have all 9 slots full right now, and I have additional ones, so in case one doesn't pan out or I end up not liking it so much, then I can take it out and put a new one in. Again, there's a really great solution for Nikon photographers. Now, Olympus and OM photographers also have many options in this area. And I think the Olympus route, at least as I've experienced it, is a little bit different, because the other camera that I pack in my backpack, I have 2 cameras in there that I just walk around with. I have other cameras for professional shoots and all this, but the 2 cameras that I have in my backpack when I go to work every day is the Nikon, the ZF, and then the Olympus Pen F. And the reason why I like the Pen F so much, well, there's tons of reasons why that I've discussed over the years. But another reason why is that it has all the different settings, such as shadow, highlights, color, all that kind of stuff that you can set and then save as a recipe. So then all you have to do is get the settings, the recipe settings, and then you can create endless film simulations with that camera and hang on to them. As an example, Rob Trek Online has published 3 Fujifilm film simulations with the settings for OM system cameras or Olympus cameras. Now, I have a link to that in the show notes here, so you can just go to the show notes, click on that link, and go right over there, and you can see he just lists the different settings for each film simulation. You apply those settings to your Olympus camera, save them, give them a name, and then now you have that. So Olympus cameras are great for this, and there's all sorts of recipes out there. You just have to find the ones that you want, enter them into the camera, and off to the races you go. And it goes on and on. Sony, Canon, they all have their own way of applying these different recipes to your JPEGs. And you just have to kind of learn how each camera system works, a little bit of investigation, you know, find what you like, put them in there, and then start shooting with them. Now, you can also apply film simulations in post-production. The difference with post-production is that you're not seeing that simulation while you're shooting, so that whole experience gets kind of put off to the side. The good thing about post-production is that you can just sit there with a list and just, you know, mouse over one and see what it looks like, mouse over the next one, see what it looks like, you know, until you get to the one that you like, and then use that. So, you know, both have their advantages. The main way that I use post-production, I'm going to get to this in a minute because I have some tips for film simulations. If I don't really like the film simulation that I've picked while I'm shooting, then in post, I can change it. And so I use it more to change a decision that I made. But you can use it creatively too, just kind of go through it. And this is true for all the different software applications. They all have ways to apply these different looks. All righty. So post-production or while shooting, I prefer while shooting, but post-production is a great alternative. If you just kind of shot, you know, oh, I just shot in regular JPEG, but I really want a different look for this, then do it in post-production. It'll work out great. And when I say the different software applications all have the ability to do this, I am talking about Adobe, DxO, Capture One, Photomator, Raw Power, On One. Some of them have more than others. On One, for example, has a ton of them. Capture One has, you know, all the default profiles for my Nikon. And then, of course, I can use styles for other film simulations. It just goes on and on. DxO has Film Pack, which is fantastic. Depending on what software you use, you will be able to apply these looks. All right, so you can do it while you're taking pictures. You can do it after you've taken pictures. How about a few tips for just working with this in general? The first tip is, if you like doing it during shooting, then shoot RAW plus JPEG. I like to see the difference between what I captured and then sort of what the native look is for that camera. And I'll use the Nikon. So if I shoot with a picture control for Fujifilm Provia, so then my JPEG will look like that. And then the Nikon RAW file will look like Nikon Photo Standard or, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then you can really see the difference. You can really compare the two of them. And I think that's interesting, and I like that. And it really helps me judge, all right, is the film simulation rendering better? Or is the Nikon standard better for this particular shot? And you can just make that decision snap because you got them side by side. Also, of course, if you just totally don't like whatever you've done with a JPEG when you captured it, the RAW is the ultimate safety net and you can change it to whatever you want. No harm done. The film simulation you applied during capture does not affect the RAW. So shoot RAW plus JPEG, period. The next thing that I think is really handy, if you like playing with film simulations, make sure that in your metadata descriptions in post, that you note the film simulation that you used for that shot. And the reason being is that the camera typically doesn't capture film simulation information, right? It'll just call it ICC custom profile or, you know, something generic like that. And you're not going to know Provia from Tri-X, right? Looking at the metadata. So what I do is when I go out the door, I say, okay, I'm going to shoot with this film simulation today because I have an idea of what I'm going to encounter. And then it's easier when you stick with one simulation for the day, knowing that you can always, you know, change it in post. And then I add that film simulation to the metadata of my 3-star shots, the shots that I really like. So that way I know what I shot it in so that I can return to it. I also create albums in Capture One Pro for my film simulations. And I have them all in there. So that way, if I'm going, you know, I'm going to be doing these flat scenes today. They're going to be, they're outdoors. They're just sort of covered and stuff. And I'm not sure what I want to use as a starting point. Well, I can go to my Capture One album that has the different film simulations I've tried so far for the Nikon and just kind of browse them and look for similar conditions and go, you know, I really like that one. So then I can use that film simulation as a starting point. So I find it really useful to log my own comparisons and label them in my application software. So that to me, I mean, I just think it's great. Otherwise, it's too hard to memorize them. It's too hard to remember. And then you're always just kind of end up, I'll just try this one. And you can narrow it down to be a little bit more scientific about it if you want. As I mentioned before, the cool thing is when you shoot RAW plus JPEG, you can see the difference between the two. And that will really help you judge that film simulation as well. So this is just a lot of fun. I absolutely love it. Of course, I happen to shoot with 3 camera brands that are very friendly to film simulations, Fujifilm, OM System, and Nikon. There's no going back. I mean, once you really get into it, you're not going back. Trust me. Try them, have some fun, and see what you think. The new film camera from Pentax is a half-frame compact. And this is from casualphotophile.com. I have a link in the show notes so you can get the entire story. Pentax, Ricoh, they've initiated this thing called the Film Camera Project, and they're going to produce, according to them, a number of film cameras, and they've just announced what the first one is going to be. Casual Photophile, really into all of this stuff, and I thought they would be a good person for us to listen to in terms of what they have to say about it. Let me read you a little bit, and then I'll comment. Ricoh Imaging has just announced the first camera in their Pentax film project that will be a half-frame 35mm camera. The camera will feature automatic and manual functions, zone focus, a lens inspired by the well-regarded Pentax SBO and IQ series of point-and-shoot cameras from the 1990s and 2000s, and a manual film rewind function. In a video released by Pentax's Film Project's YouTube channel, Product Planner goes into further details of the camera and offers insight as to why these design choices were made. They wanted to start their film camera project lineup with a camera that would be easy to use, affordable, and appeal to a younger generation of film photographers. This all seems to align with what we've known for years now regarding Pentax film camera plans and roadmap. All right, now let's go to his take on the new Pentax film camera. I've been positive about the news that Pentax would release a new film camera since I first heard about it a few years ago. I wrote my thoughts about it, and they remain largely unchanged. That a major camera manufacturer is jumping into film camera production post-2020 is a big deal for people who like film. The fact that they announced their intention to develop four new cameras is incredible, ensuring that eventually there will be a model type for every sort of photographer. This first new camera doesn't necessarily sound like my dream camera, but then again, this is all going according to plan so far. Remember that Pentax said they'd make affordable entry-level camera for newcomers and then follow that up with the type of cameras I like best. As far as a cheap half-frame camera goes, they're fine, just not my favorite. It may be slightly unfair comparison, in fact, since I've not yet seen Pentax's new camera myself, but reviewed the Kodak Retro Ektar H35, a compact and affordable half-frame film point-and-shoot not long ago, and came away fairly unimpressed. From the official Pentax info, releases, and conversations I've had elsewhere, I believe Pentax's new film camera will be quite a bit better than that. Better lens, more solid construction, not cheap and flimsy like the Kodak. I'm envisioning something more like an Olympus XA2, except half-frame, and that would be lovely indeed. So I've also read some other comments aside from this, what people's first reaction have been. Now, I think the interesting thing about the situation is the sites that we read are sites with photographers who are photographers, right? I mean, this is their bag. And probably film photographers as well, having shot with some of the greatest film cameras of all time. So for them to just sort of step back and look at it from Pentax's point of view is probably difficult. What Pentax has done, I think, has started with a blank slate and saying, look, how do we make the first big splash appeal to as many photographers as possible, especially young photographers who seem particularly interested in film photography right now? This is what their research says. So I'm going to trust them on that. I agree with Casual Photophile. This is anything but my dream camera. However, I'm sitting here with some great film cameras that I have at my disposal whenever I want, from Nikon, Contax, Pentax, Olympus, right? I have those already. It's going to take something really fantastic to make me buy that instead of using what I already have. But I am fascinated by this project, and I'm going to trust Pentax, and I want them to be successful. I want them to keep making the other cameras up the line, because this could get really interesting. Cross your fingers and let's see what happens. the best Micro Four Thirds lenses in 2024. And this is from amateurphotographer.com. I have the link in the show notes. I just thought this was fun. I love these sort of collections, especially for Micro Four Thirds cameras. So they talk about, you know, they have a little introduction here saying, you know, what incredible lens library Micro Four Thirds photographers have access to, you know, kind of all that stuff. Lenses made not only by Panasonic and OM system, but also, you know, other stuff from third party. And so they kind of go into all that stuff. So the first number of paragraphs are interesting and worth reading. But let's get to the quick list. So they have 5-star lenses and they have 4.5-star lenses. Let's start with the 5-star. The best ultra-wide zoom. The Olympus ED 8-25mm F4 Pro. That's the best ultra-wide zoom. That is a nice lens. Best macro, OM system 90mm f3.5 macro IS Pro, by the way, which is getting rave reviews from a number of macro photographers out there who are very serious about this type of work. So that seems to be an amazing lens. I haven't shot with it myself. Best portrait lens, the Leica DG 42.5mm f1.2 OIS. So they have that as the best portrait lens. And then the best Olympus portrait lens is a 25mm f1.2 Pro. Now, I will say that those are both fantastic lenses. I've shot with them both. And I agree that they're great lenses. But I will tell you, the Olympus 75mm f1.8 I think is better than both of those. So just my 2 cents there. Best standard zoom lens, the Olympus 12-45 F4 Pro, not the F2.8, but the F4. And the best super zoom, the Olympus 12-100 F4 IS Pro. That 12-100 is a dynamite lens, no doubt about it. Then they have some 4.5-star lenses. And I'm just going to run through this list really fast to see if yours is on there. Best standard prime, Panasonic 20mm f1.7, a lens near and dear to my heart. Best ultra-wide prime, the Leica DG 9mm f1.7. Best OM system prime, the OM system 20mm f1.4. Best lens for astrophotography, Olympus 7-14 f2.8 Pro. Best compact telephoto, Olympus 40-150 f4 Pro. Best Sigma portrait lens, the Sigma 56mm f1.4. Best premium wide angle, the Leica 12mm f1.4. Best budget portrait lens, Panasonic 25mm f1.7. So anyway, so those are the lenses for Micro Four Thirds photographer. Best Micro Four Thirds lenses in 2024, according to amateurphotographer.com. And I have a link to this article in the show notes. Want to mention the Infrared Photography Workshop, the online event coming up in June 2024. If you feel like the world is looking like the same old through your camera viewfinder, if you felt your enthusiasm for photography waning, then it's time for you to consider exploring infrared photography. And this workshop will either help you get started or help you refine your existing infrared photography skills. We cover just about everything you need to know, from the best filters to work with for the type of photography you want to do, what to do with your existing digital camera. Can you use it? Do you need to have it converted? Learn about the different types of IR conversions. Learn how to fine-tune your images with software you already own. It just goes on and on. This is so much fun. We've been doing this workshop for a while, and we really have all the bases covered. It starts in June 2024. You can sign up now by clicking on the workshops link at thedigitalstory.com or at thenimblephotographer.com. Or the link here in the show notes. It's an online workshop. It goes for 4 weeks and it's a blast. Hope to see you there. Nikon says it's passionate about providing firmware updates. This is on petapixel.com, and I have a link to the article in the show notes. Let me read you what they have to say. In a consumer landscape riddled with planned obsolescence, Nikon hopes to keep its camera users happier for longer through strong firmware support. While firmware updates may not carry the allure of a new model or a sleek redesign, the emphasis on back-end support can keep a camera feeling fresh for years to come, saving money and resources that might otherwise go toward more frequent upgrades. In an interview with French publication PhotoTrend at CP Plus 2024, a photography exhibition in Japan, Nikon's head of UX planning explained the company's emphasis on firmware updates. He explains that Nikon's firmware developers will work within a camera's parameters to deliver on customer requests. While not everything can happen via updates alone, it certainly gives models a longer shelf life and can deliver solid quality of life improvements. For example, Nikon Z8 and Z9 don't have mechanical shutters, so the audio cue is emitted through a speaker. Initially, Nikon made it so this was only detectable to the photographer, but it became clear that models benefit from the sound of a shutter click as well. A new model could move the speaker, making it easier for both parties to hear, or the sound can be raised. Here's a quote from Nikon. There are many innovations underway, especially in the case of hybrid camera processors and sensors. With the accumulated information and knowledge, we can further expand these functionalities. Even after our users buy product, thanks to these firmware updates, they can continue to enjoy and use their Nikon camera. We want to exceed the expectations of our customers, and I love that last line. Huge fan of firmware updates. Kind of fits with today's topic, right? I mean, we're talking about film simulations, which is an update on its own because it allows you to expand the capability of your JPEG processing. But then there's firmware updates that allow you to do other things, add camera functionality, all that kind of stuff. OM System has been good about them. Fujifilm's been good about them. Nikon has been good about them. Panasonic has been good about them. I don't see as many notifications from Canon, but I know they have had firmware updates. And I know Sony does do firmware updates. So this is just really a terrific thing. Keep an eye out to make sure that you're running the latest firmware for your camera, because chances are not only will it smooth out some of the camera's functionality, it may add a new feature or two that you really like. And again, this article was on petapixel.com and you can read it via the link in the show notes. Bryce, take care of a little virtual camera club business. A big shout out to our Patreon users. These are the folks, the Inner Circle members, that support this community month in and month out. They have their exclusive page on Derek's Story Online. They have a space just for Inner Circle members where all sorts of interesting conversations are happening. It's really an enjoyable place to hang out. Even if you don't want to join in the conversation, if you just want to see what others are talking about in the community that you belong to, you can do that too. And by the way, you can view that on not only your computer, but we have an application that works on both Android and iOS mobile devices, complete with notifications if you want them and all that good stuff. Just one of the benefits of being an Inner Circle member, if you want to join us in 2024, and I hope you do, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can sign up there. I'll follow up, get you in the space on Derek's Story Online, and then you can join the rest of us. And a huge thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. I'd like to tip my hat to the good folks at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that put the art in inkjet printing. They also make it fun. And this is a little bit about what we've talked about today, being creative, having some fun, shaking it up a little bit with your pictures. Well, we have film simulations to change the look of our JPEGs when we're taking pictures, but you can also alter the look of your images when you print them by using different paper stocks, sort of like the film simulation of printing. So you can go from a matte surface that really softens the look to a super glossy surface that really has vibrant colors and sharp detail, everything in between. There's metallic paper, there's paper that's fiber-based like old darkroom paper. They have everything, all this different stuff to create different looks for your digital images to match the look of the print with the subject and the desired effect that you want. And Red River Paper will help you with this. They have all sorts of information on their site to help you choose the right paper for the type of photography that you want to do. There's a tile on all the pages of the digital story. All you have to do is click on it, nose around, find some paper that matches your style, and then start printing. And a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, have a great week. Get out there, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.